Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around tonight. We have... I don't know. For some reason, we seem to have just an endless supply of weirdness tonight. Yeah, how many times have I said that? Starting with radio personality Bernie Ward, the San Francisco talk show liberal. He pled not guilty last December to distributing and receiving child pornography via the Internet. He plans to change his plea tomorrow to guilty. His attorney, Duran Weinberg, was unavailable for comment last night. The case against Ward began when he engaged in sex chats with an online dominatrix and allegedly sent her pictures of children engaged in sexual activity. That's according to the police report that we talked about last, I believe it was last December. The woman involved, who lives in Oakdale, California, became concerned after Ward allegedly sent her pictures in December 2004 showing children engaged in or simulating sex acts with adults or other children. That's according to the Oakdale Police Department, according to their report. A federal grand jury indicted Ward, a former Catholic priest, in September on two counts of distributing child pornography and one count of receiving child pornography using the Internet. Ward pled not guilty to the charges last December and had insisted that he was innocent of any wrongdoing, according to his lawyer. His lawyer said that the conversation Ward had with the dominatrix consisted only of role-playing as part of a book he, Ward, was researching on hypocrisy. And last month, Ward sought a ruling from the judge that would allow him to present a defense that he received and distributed this garbage for legitimate First Amendment purposes, namely to research and comment upon social mores. Okay. Well, the federal prosecutors involved in this opposed any such ruling, saying in court papers that allowing such First Amendment defenses, quote, would invite every defendant charged with child pornography crimes to suddenly become a legitimate researcher educating the masses via their weblog, end quote. And upon hearing news of that, apparently former KGO radio talk personality Bernie Ward is going to plead guilty, and he is facing some serious time. Now, back in December when the story was made public, of course, we reported on it on this program and commented on it. And I made some comments at the time, kind of throwaway comments, but admittedly sort of snotty. I said, if I remember, the defense, when these people are accused of these sorts of crimes, the immediate defense is, oh, no. I was just researching a book. And I made some reference to the asininity and idiocy of that kind of a defense. And secondly, I threw in a line about the fact that he's a former Catholic priest casts a dark shadow over his protestations of innocence. Well, immediately, I received a bunch of emails from people, I guess Bernie Ward fans, and I certainly can understand this, castigating me and saying, how dare you, and, guilty or innocent till guilty, and so on and so forth. But I tried to make the point, I wasn't referring specifically, okay, I was referring to Bernie Ward, but the more general statement I was making is that when some man is accused of this sort of thing, and the first defense out of his mouth is that, yeah, I had the pictures on my computer. Oh, sure, I would say, yeah, but I was just doing research. research. The guy might as well stand, I don't care if it's Bernie Ward or Abe Snake, he might as well stand up and say, yes, I'm guilty! So, anyway, for those of you who sent me those emails, a simple one-line apology will work. My email address is mike@mikemalloy.com. Thank you very much. Speaking of weirdness, in Pasco County, Florida, which is a county just north of Tampa, a substitute teacher has been fired because of a magic trick. And what has he been charged with that has resulted in his being fired? Wizardry. Can't even pronounce it. This substitute teacher has been charged with wizardry. Son of a Bitch, what century are we in? Wizardry. The guy does a 30-second magic trick where a toothpick disappears then reappears. But according to, Tampa Bay Online, after performing this little trick in front of a classroom at Rush Middle School in Land O'Lakes, Florida, the teacher, Jim Peculis, said his job did a disappearing act of its own. He said, I get a call in the middle of the day from the supervisor of substitute teachers. The guy says, Jim, we have a huge issue. You can't take any more assignments. You need to come in right away. So when Peculis went in, he learned that his little magic trick went much further than he'd hoped. I said to the supervisor, well, Pat, can you explain this to me? And the supervisor said, well, you've been accused of wizardry. Wizardry? He asked. Now, the Pasco County School District, of course, immediately says, well, it wasn't just the wizardry. He had other performance issues as substitute teacher, including not following lesson plans and allowing students to play on unapproved computers. Peculis said he knew nothing about these extra accusations. He says, I think they were embellishing after the fact to try to cover up initially what they were saying to me. Wizardry. After the magic trick, the principal at Rush Middle School requested that Peculis be dismissed. Now, he's a substitute teacher, and as such, the Pasco County School District considers this guy to be an at-will employee. That means the district doesn't need to have cause for not bringing him back at all. Wizardry, for God's sake. He made a toothpick disappear. Son of a bitch. I have about three little basic stupid illusions that I do for my almost four-year-old daughter, Molly. I rub a penny on my elbow. And in the process of diverting her attention, I make it disappear. Where does the penny go? I actually put it into my ear canal, the part where I can retrieve it from. And Molly sits there fascinated, and then the penny comes back from her ear. Jesus God, I'm glad I'm not a substitute teacher. I'd be fired. Where do we live? Where do we live? Wizardry. Wizardry. Jesus God. Jim Turr, who lives in Santa Fe and has jimturr.com, that's spelled T-E-R-R, jimturr.com. Jim is an internet associate or friend or whatever for, I don't know, hell what, Kathy, 6-7 years. I've known Jim. Never met him, but I know him. You know, one of those relationships. He sent me an email today. Subject line, what I'd love to hear Obama say, since he's managed to stay on the high road so far, more or less, and this is what I think is really in his heart and mind, too. This is what I'd like to hear him say. With this Myanmar death toll rising, among the other general ongoing disasters in this world, it would be nice if the U.S. could be primarily a force for good and helpfulness in the world in situations like this and hundreds of other issues. Instead of a center of self-involved ideologuing, name-calling, consumerism, militarism, and a whole industry in the use of hatred and contempt that's being used to, quote, hold us together, end quote. Though the other side could then spin this to make him look dreamy and idealistic, they do that with everything and nothing anyhow. And he's managed to appeal to people's better side so far. I think the truth is that this country will never be at peace until there's more peace and justice and less suffering in the world. These are my thoughts. Jim Turr, Santa Fe. Growing up. Mama.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. John Stauber is the executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy, and he has two books out about Bush's war. The titles are Iraq, Weapons of Mass Deception. I'm sure you've heard of that one. And the second book is The Best War Ever. I'm sure you've heard of that one, too. He wrote today about the 8,000 pages of documents related to the Pentagon's illegal propaganda campaign known as the Pentagon's Military Analyst Program. All those documents are now online for the world to see. This is what the New York Times exposed. But apparently they're online in a format that makes it impossible to easily search them and therefore difficult to read and dissect unless you're really intent on doing so. Now, what the Pentagon has put out there includes the documents pried out of the Pentagon by David Barstow in his New York Times April 20th investigation. And as Stauber writes, the Pentagon program, which clearly violated U.S. law against covert government propaganda, embedded more than 75 retired military officers, most of them with financial ties to war contractors, into the TV networks as so-called message surrogates for the Bush administration. And the weird part, of course, is to date, every major commercial TV network has failed to report this story, covering up their complicity and keeping the existence of this scandal from the audiences. I'll bet you 98% of the American public doesn't have a clue about what the story is about. I'm excluding 2% to cover all those people who subscribe to the New York Times or read it online, and the people who may have seen a brief report of this on CNN. I don't know about MSNBC. And for CNN, for Wolf Blitzer to report on it, I thought was just absolutely hysterically, knee-slappingly funny, since CNN has, for a number of years, I don't know if it's still true since I don't work there anymore, but employed directly into their editorial department two, count them, two CIA active operatives. Why? Oh, I don't know. They needed a second job to write copy, I guess. Plus Wolf Blitzer's own history as an intelligence agent. So it's kind of funny that CNN is the only one. I guess CNN feels, well, you know, so what? Anyway, the National Security News Service let the cat out of the bag that the Pentagon has posted all these documents online. Otherwise, how are you going to know about it, right? Now, if you want to find them, go to DOD.mil, Department of Defense.military, DOD.mil, and look around. Good luck. And as Stauber writes, more than 2 weeks after the Times reported on this Pentagon military analyst program to sell controversial policies like the invasion of Iraq, the broadcast television news outlets implicated in the program are hoping, as they always do, that they will succeed in doing what they are chartered to do, make us forget. And they'll do that by refusing to report it. You know, if it's not on television, it doesn't exist anyway, right? Recently, Media Matters of America reported that according to a search of the Nexus database, the three major broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, still have not mentioned the report at all. And the Pew Center for Excellence in Journalism Project has a chart showing that, quote, there was virtually no mainstream media follow-up to the Times expose, end quote, with the only national TV coverage being the introduction segment and a live debate featuring John Stauber on the PBS NewsHour. A congresswoman, Rosa DeLauro, and three dozen of her colleagues have sent a letter to the Department of Defense Inspector General calling for an investigation of this, quote, propaganda campaign aimed at deliberately misleading the American public, end quote. Well, you know how far that's going to go, right? Huh? It's just astonishing. astonishing the degree to which television is complicit in just about everything that is bad in this country, which is 90% of everything right now. Let's be real. Maybe things are okay inside your family. I hope it is. I hope things are okay. Outside of your family, the whole goddamn country is just shredded. It's coming apart at the seams. You know that as well as I do. We're keeping it quiet. Let's keep it quiet. And what does television report on? Tornadoes in Oklahoma, I guess. I don't know. Oh, yeah, and American Idol. Now, when we come back, Glenn Greenwald is turning out to become one of my favorite writers. Something he has at Salon.com about media. Further information that you and I need to know. Not that we don't know this on some sort of visceral, gut-level basis. But I want to share this with you when we come back. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Mike Malloy.
Yeah, not here. 25 before the hour. All right, before we go to this media garbage, a couple of emails you people are writing. Adam in Tampa writes about the school teacher fired for wizardry because he made a toothpick disappear. Adam writes, and if he floats in water, he's guilty. Not guilty if he drowns. Yeah. Adam also includes this guy, he says, I heard that the teacher also took the kids' souls by photographing them. Oh, man. I don't know anymore. I really don't. Some good news. Harry Taylor, the guy in North Carolina who was running for Congress, we had him on this program. He's the one that stood up at a Bush, what did you call those discussions? When Bush went out to talk to people, what the hell was it? The town hall meetings. And this Harry Taylor stood up and asked him if he felt any guilt, any remorse about what he had done. And Bush, of course, was flummoxed, couldn't answer. Harry Taylor has won his primary in North Carolina. Suzanne in L.A. sent that to me. Great. That is good news. That is good news. Glenn Greenwald at... writing at Salon. I think Glenn is on where does he appear? Sam Cedar's program, I know. I think Sam has him on quite a bit. Anyway, it's a fairly lengthy article, but just a couple of quotes here. Glenn writes, just as is true now, America heading into the 1988 election had endured almost two full terms of Republican rule under a president who, contrary to the myth of the canonized Ronald Reagan, a president whom the American people had come to distrust and disapprove of. That's why 1987 and early 1988 polls continuously show George Bush the first running far behind prospective Democratic challengers, because the Republican brand, like now, was profoundly discredited among the citizenry, though to a lesser extent than it is now. And then this is from a New York Times article by then reporter E.J. Dionne, who now works for, he's a columnist for the Washington Post, right? This is what E.J. Dionne wrote March 3rd, 1987. President Reagan's approval rating has plunged to its lowest level in more than 4 years, according to the latest New York Times CBS News poll. The survey taken Saturday and Sunday after the release of the report of a presidential commission on the Iran arms deal found that 42% of those surveyed approved of the way Mr. Reagan was handling his job and 46% disapproved. It was his lowest rating since January 1983, when only 41% approved of his performance. About half of the 1,174 adults interviewed by telephone said Mr. Reagan was lying about key aspects of the Iran arms affair. Only a quarter said he was in charge of what went on in his administration. Vice President Bush has also suffered a significant drop in his popularity. This time, 32% of those surveyed said they had a favorable opinion of him and 19% a negative view. In January, 43% were favorable and 23% unfavorable. Still, the erosion has clearly hurt Mr. Bush politically. Asked how they would vote if the 1988 election were held now, 47% of registered voters said they would back former Senator Gary Hart, the Democrat with the most support in surveys of his party, and only 34% chose Mr. Bush. E.J. Dionne goes on, but almost every other measure in the survey indicated a deep erosion in Mr. Reagan's popularity. Approval of Mr. Reagan's handling of foreign policy was at the lowest level of his presidency. Only 29% approved, 58% disapproved. And in a response that was tougher on Mr. Reagan than the commission was, the Iran-Contra Commission, a majority of those surveyed said they did not believe Mr. Reagan's statement that he forgot when he approved the arms sale to Iran. The respondents were asked, quote, Ronald Reagan says he does not remember when he approved the arms sales to Iran. Do you think he really does not remember or that he is lying? 35% said they believed Reagan. 51% said he was lying. Half those surveyed thought the affair was at least as serious as Watergate. And about as many said it was, quote, of great importance, end quote, to the country. Now, that's the end of E.J. Dionne's column from back then. As Glenn Greenwald says, for those reasons, just as is true now, the Republican operatives running Bush the First campaign, Lee Atwater and Roger Ailes, who went on to set up Fox News, realized back then that they could never win the election if America voted on the basis of substance, policy positions, and issues. They thus resolved to shift the playing field away from issues to manipulate to manipulative adolescent questions of patriotism, manliness, and personal likability. Hence, Michael Dukakis is an effete elitist who doesn't believe in the Pledge of Allegiance. He looks dorky bowling, wearing a helmet. He proved he wasn't a man when he failed to show primal rage when asked if in a debate about his wife being hypothetically raped, etc., etc. With the help of a media enthralled to such shallow, easy-to-chatter-about attacks, they succeeded in electing a highly unpopular figure from a scandal-plagued, discredited party. And Republicans with their media partners have been using that depraved playbook ever since and will continue to do so this year. For the 1988 election, Reagan's severe economic mismanagement, his disastrous foreign policy filled with savage covert wars, and widespread perceptions that top Reagan officials had blatantly lied about breaking the law were all just disappeared. Actual issues played virtually no role in George Bush the First's 40-state triumph. And then Greenwald goes on. You ought to read this, Salon.com. The media, the right, in 1988, endless deja vu. And this is exactly what the sons of bitches are doing this time. Even the words, the charges, the accusations are interchangeable. What was used against Gary Hart, Michael Dukakis, is now being used against Barack Obama. One slight oddity, right now, most of the charges against Barack Obama, most of these tactics are being employed by, that's right, Hillary Clinton. But media complicity in all this is just outrageous. I mean, from an industry that is chartered and charged by the Constitution to do its job, for these filthy bastards to be doing what they're doing every single night, every single night. Charlie Gibson and the rest of these freaks doing what they do. It's just, and then this story that is correct. It's correct in that it's not getting any conversation at all in so-called mainstream media. The fact that, once again, how many times is it now that this filthy Bush administration violated the law and put out there these ex-military officers who should have been ashamed of themselves for what they were doing, using their positions as former flag rank, most of them military officers, using their position against a population, that's us, that is totally freaked out by all of this and don't know what the truth is about anything anymore, using their position to advance the Bush crime family's agenda. God damn them. I mean, I am so sick of this. I'm sick of these whores. I don't care where they come from. I don't care if they come from the church, the military, the government, business. We are besieged by lying sons of bitches. We're surrounded by them. And why do they do it? Why are they willing to sell out this country? To sell out their own integrity, whatever's left of it. Why are they willing to do this? What is it about these pig bastards? Well, starting with Limbaugh and moving across all these retired generals and colonels and into the minds of the anchor people and the assignment editors on network television. I mean, it just goes on and on. What is it? And it has to be something that they get out of this. Instant gratification, money, payoffs, I don't know. I have no idea. But damn them all. I mean, just damn them all. Damn them all. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malloy.
And you talk that talk.
So, there is a move on the part of the Republicans to deny education benefits to veterans. We're going to get to that a little bit into the program tonight and a couple other items. For some reason, tonight's menu seems to be filled with military-related items, whether it is the mistreatment of veterans or the putting out of these paid shills on television, these former officers to whore for the Bush or pimp for the Bush crime family. No offense to sex workers, of course. I meant pimp for the Bush crime family. I don't mind offending pimps. I really don't. But as far as sex workers are concerned, no. But it seems like there's a number of those stories that tonight that have been accumulating, and I want to get them out. Here's one. This is from Greenville, South Carolina. And it says the following. This is from the Greenville News, the newspaper there. Harriet Chapman's eyes filled with tears Sunday as she recalled one of the last conversations she had with her 89-year-old father before he fatally shot himself outside a Greenville Veterans Clinic last month. Grover Cleveland Chapman told his family, quote, "No matter what I apply for at the VA, they turn me down," end quote, the daughter recalled. The next day, the World War II veteran took his own life outside the Veterans Outpatient Clinic at 3510 Augusta Road, according to Greenville County Deputy Coroner Mike Ellis. Harriet Chapman, the daughter, sees her father's April 24th death as his way of sending a message about the medical care offered by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. While staff at the clinic treated him well, he'd recently lost two battles in a continuous struggle to claim medical benefits, the daughter said. She added, quote, "He felt like the VA turned its back on him and a lot of other veterans," end quote. A spokeswoman for the clinic said a caseworker who met with Grover Cleveland Chapman 2 days before his death saw nothing that raised a red flag. The spokeswoman said, quote, "We feel very badly for the family. We'd be happy to talk with them further if there's anything we can do," end quote. Harriet Chapman, the fifth of seven children, said her father was honorably discharged from the Army and Navy before returning to Greenville, where he worked as a machinist. He learned in a phone call on the Wednesday before his death that he was going to have to travel to Columbia, South Carolina, for medical tests, although he'd been hoping for a waiver that would have allowed him to get the test done closer to home, according to his daughter. More bad news came hours later when he received a letter saying he'd been denied 100% disability. If he'd been approved, the Veterans Administration would have picked up more of his medical bills, according to his daughter. Grover Cleveland Chapman had the letter with him when he shot himself, the daughter said. The spokeswoman for the VA referred questions about benefits to the Veterans Benefits Administration regional office in Columbia, where no one could be reached on Saturday. 89 years old, World War II veteran, and they were jerking him around. When I read this story, it reminded me of a scene from 1963-4. I guess it was before Kennedy, maybe immediately after Kennedy was assassinated. It was film that made it onto television. This iconic series of images of the Buddhist monk in Saigon on the steps of a government building there, sitting very calmly as he burned to death, having set himself on fire in protest of the government of so-called South Vietnam. And for some reason, I just flashed on that picture of that Buddhist monk, aflame, not moving. Yeah, they used to put stuff like that on television. Can you believe that? I remember the smoke coming from his body seemed extraordinarily white as opposed to what one would think about body tissue burning. And we have, when we come back from the break that is fast approaching, we have a moment with Bob this evening. What else do we have? Iraq is backing off allegations that Iran is behind the increase in violence. That's not going to play well with the Bush crime family. The Iraqi government, this is from 2 days ago, seemed to distance itself from U.S. accusations toward Iran, saying it would not be forced into conflict with Iran. The prime minister, our puppet there, ordered the formation of a committee to look into foreign intervention in Iraq. But the government appeared to back down from its hardening stance against Iran. A government spokesman told reporters Sunday that a committee was formed to find, quote, tangible information, end quote, about foreign intervention. Specifically, if Iran does have a role, rather than, quote, information based on speculation, end quote, that would be what comes from the Americans there. The Iraqi government spokesman, said, referring to the 8 years of war between those two nations, in which an estimated million people died, he said, quote, "We don't want to be pushed into any conflict with any neighboring countries, especially Iran. What happened before is enough. We paid a lot, end quote. And U.S. officials in Baghdad rejected allegations made Saturday by a senior Iranian official who, according to Iranian state media, accused the United States of attacking Iraqi civilians. Well, we did, and we continue to do it. We call it collateral damage or a mistake, or we're sorry. But the latest was a missile strike near the major hospital in Sadr City. We talked about this the other night. Hospital officials said that the main water supply was ruined. Scores of people were injured. The hospital may have to close if it isn't repaired. It is one of two main hospitals serving the massive Shiite slum, Sadr City. It's operating on a backup water supply that's just about out. It just goes on and on, doesn't it? Huh? It just doesn't stop. So anytime we launch missiles against U.S. military command in Iraq said, well, there was a house near the hospital that we just knew contained insurgents, so we had to go after it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. And again, thanks for tuning in. If you're just joining us, oh my God, did you miss a wondrous first hour? Oh well, too bad. Andrew Coburn is revealing something at Counterpunch that is news to me. Apparently, 6 weeks ago, Chucklenuts signed a secret finding authorizing a covert offensive against the Iranian regime that, according to those familiar with its contents, quote, is unprecedented in its scope, end quote. Uh-oh. Now, apparently, this secret directive that Bush signed 6 weeks ago covers actions, that means war, across a huge geographic area from Lebanon to Afghanistan. That's bad enough, but this directive is more sweeping in the type of actions permitted than in the past, because it includes assassination of target officials and, of course, torture, illegal detentions. The widened scope clears the way, for example, for full support on the part of the Bush crime family for the military arm of Mujahideen-e-Khalq. That's a cultish Iranian opposition group that the U.S. State Department has listed as a terrorist organization. But since they are anti-Iranian, we're going to support them now and have been. Well, we have been. But this is the directive, the finding that this thug in the White House has signed now gives it the support to this terrorist organization, so-called. I don't know if it's a terrorist organization or not. The Iranians damn sure think it is because they seek to assassinate and murder people inside Iran. Now, is that because they are secularists? No, they're fundamentalist hardliners. So we are now going to support them, much as we did the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Oh, never mind. You've heard that story before. Anyway, according to the finding, covert funds also can now flow without restriction to the militant Sunni group in Iranian Baluchistan. It is called Jundullah, or the Army of God. Now, their leader, the leader of this group, was featured not so long ago on Dan Rather Reports, not on CBS, but on the cable network he works for now. Dan Weather reports cutting his brother-in-law's throat. That's why was he cutting his brother-in-law's throat? Because he could. Jesus. They will be getting support from the Bush crime family now. Money, weaponry, intelligence. Other elements that will benefit from U.S. largesse and advice include Iranian Kurdish nationalists. I wonder how the Turks are going to feel about that. Also, operations will be funded against Iran's Hezbollah allies in Lebanon, along with efforts to destabilize the Syrian regime. All this costs money, which in turn must be authorized by Congress, or at least by a few of the witting, as opposed to unwitting, members of the intelligence committees. This has never proved to be a problem. An initial outlay of $300 million to finance implementation of the finding has been swiftly approved with bipartisan support, apparently regardless of the unpopularity of the current war and the perilous condition of the U.S. economy. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Democrats who are in charge in Congress are worse. They are worse, I tell you, than the Republicans. Because the Democrats, we still think, oh, well, they're really the good guys. No, they're not. Most of them are lying, deceitful, duplicitous thugs, just like the Republicans. Now, what are we going to do about it? Now, here's some new information for you. Until recently, the Bush administration faced a serious obstacle to action against Iran in the form of, that's right, Admiral William Fallon, who made no secret of his contempt for official determination to take us to war. Last January, you remember that incident, Iranian patrol boats approached a U.S. ship in what the Pentagon described as a taunting manner. Remember that? I'm coming to you! According to CENTCOM staff officers, the American commander on the spot was about to open fire. And at that point, we were close to yet another war. The American commander on the scene desisted, stopped, only when Admiral Fallon personally and explicitly ordered him not to shoot. And the White House, according to staff officers, was, quote, absolutely furious, end quote, with Fallon for defusing the incident. Now you know why Fallon was fired. Oh, I know, he retired, yeah. And his replacement, of course, is Bush's favorite general, David Petraeus, who never met a boot that he of a superior that he wasn't willing to suck and kiss. I said boot. Now, Petraeus is not due to take formal command at CENTCOM until late this summer. But, of course, we've been talking about all these signs that something may happen before then. Colburn points out that a Marine amphibious force, originally due to leave San Diego for the Persian Gulf in mid-June, has had its sailing date abruptly moved up to May 4th. So it's gone. A scheduled meeting in Europe between French diplomats acting as intermediaries for the U.S. and Iranian representatives has been abruptly canceled in the last 2 weeks. Petraeus is said to be at work on a master briefing for Congress to demonstrate conclusively that the Iranians are the source of our current troubles in Iraq. And interestingly, despite all these complaints of the Iranians committing acts of aggression and war against us, Petraeus has made little effort, if any, to seal the Iran-Iraq border. And in any case, two-thirds of U.S. casualties still come from Sunni insurgents, not Shia in Iran, Sunni. A recent returned member of the command staff in Baghdad, familiar with irrelevant intelligence, told Andrew Coburn, quote, "The Shia account for less than one-third of our casualties, but if you want a war, you have to sell it." And remember what Andy Card said back in, what was it, 02? You don't introduce a new product in the summer. The new product being another war. Now, on top of all this, sometime in the next 2 weeks, I believe it's going to be in the next 2 weeks, unless he already has no, he hasn't. He hasn't gone yet. Sometime in the next weeks, as Andrew Coburn puts it, a fleet radar operator may notice a blip on their screens that represents something rather more profound, America's growing financial weakness. The blip will be former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin's plane commencing its descent into Abu Dhabi. Rubin's responsibility these days is to help keep Citigroup afloat. Despite a balance sheet still waterlogged, despite frantic bailout efforts by the Federal Reserve and others, by staggering losses in mortgage bonds, the Abu Dhabi Sovereign Wealth Fund already has injected $7.5 billion last November, but the bank, Citigroup's urgent need for fresh capital persists, and Abu Dhabi is where the money is. What is ironic about this is the contrast that is illustrated between our military power and our concomitant financial weakness. Isn't that something? Huh? So now not only are we energy dependent on Arab states and Muslim leaders, of course they're Sunnis, the ones who are killing our soldiers, and the ones who came to this country, if you believe the official story, and murdered 3,000 people on our soil. Those are the people to whom we are deeply involved with where it concerns our lust for oil, and now money. Is there any way out of this other than open Jeffersonian-style revolution? Is there? There must be. There has to be a way out of this, isn't there? And listen very closely. Tilt your head just a little bit so you can get... Yeah, okay, listen. You hear that noise, that background noise? Right on the edge of consciousness, what that background noise is. That is the cosmic chatter that's going on right now as extraterrestrials are being summoned to bleacher seats because all the good seats have been taken. Huge bowls of popcorn are being distributed as they gather to watch this little blue planet go poof. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine. And the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for a man.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
Where am I? There I am. Jesus, got the wrong end of the microphone. Hello? Too much hot sauce tonight at dinner. 22 past the hour. Ah! Let's do a phone call here. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Douglas.
Oh, Mike, good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Oh, boy. This happens a lot. By the time I get around to what I want to talk about, you've said so much more, but I'll try and stick to the program here.
Well, no, that's all right. That happens a lot. You're right. Go back to what you were going to say. This is the Malloy Show. Nothing follows any particular pattern. Although you do have an awful lot of static on your phone coming through.
Oh, no. Let me see. Is it better?
Yes, much.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Sometimes I can fix it. Okay. I just want to, first off, let's all give a heartfelt thanks to Admiral Fallon. Oh my God, I didn't realize he was personally responsible for defusing that.
Yeah, that's why he's gone. You know, these sons of bitches want war, blood, death, destruction, charred bodies, for whatever their agenda is. I still don't get it, but yeah, he's gone now. So.
Yeah. Well, let's just hang in. I've got a good media story to match yours.
All right, go ahead.
Back when the Vietnam War was going on, there was a protest on television, and they were focusing on the hippies.
Right.
And a middle-aged white mom, soccer mom type, said, "Hey, we're here too. Pay attention to us."
Yeah.
He said, and the guy actually said, "Well, he was doing that because the other guys were colorful." And they argued. I mean, she argued with him and got him to actually show who was actually against the war. And that's always stuck in my memory because it's the only time I can ever remember they let us peek behind the curtain.
And even that was probably not planned or deliberate. I cannot understand why the national media that comes to us in the form of television, which everyone knows is where the majority of Americans get the majority of what they consider to be news, that and right-wing talk radio. When you combine the two, it's clearly understandable why we are hip deep in dung. But why television news that used to be used to expose criminal activity on the part of the government and businesses, why it has done such a 180? Now, I know the quick, easy answer. I understand that. But I don't understand how people who, if they fill in an application on the line that asks for the occupation, they're going to put journalist. Why they would do this? Why we have been so deeply, profoundly betrayed by the one institution that has the power to keep us informed?
Because it's inherently anti-democratic. Just the mechanics of it.
Well, they don't need to be. I understand.
I've got a point to make here. If I can.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I read this in a Reader's Digest when I was a kid, so it's got to be true. But
yeah,
you remember when they there was a flap about how they would raise the audio signal during commercials?
Yes.
And they actually got enough people annoyed that a congressional committee investigated someplace. And
right.
They took them through a TV station and gave them a dog and pony show about how this didn't really happen and it was really complicated to do that and nobody would really want to even try.
Right.
And so they're going out the door and one congressman goes back and talks to an engineer off the record. He says, "If you wanted to boost the signal during commercials, what would you do? Turn that knob."
right. All right.
They've always, the people in control of the stations, the people after the money, they've always been against us. They've always lied. They've always pushed for more control.
Well, Douglas, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I understand what you're saying, and I certainly don't disagree. But still, there was a time when maybe your overarching truth was there. I'm not denying that. But there were journalists. Dare I say, Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, people like that, Richard C. Hodlett, all of these people who truly were journalists, who truly felt that they had an obligation because they were given constitutional protection by the framers and worked toward that obligation. That doesn't exist any longer.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Yeah, indeed. 26 before the hour. Bruce in California writes, here's the full quote from Andy Card. Quote, "From a marketing point of view, you don't introduce new products in August." End quote. That was Andrew Card to the New York Times on why the Bush crime family waited until September to make its case against Iraq. You don't introduce new product in August. Son of a bitches. God, I hate these people. I can't explain the depth. And Sheila writes, regarding media, Orwell said, quote, the people will believe what the media tells them they believe, end quote. He did not say the people would believe what the media tells them to believe. The people will believe what the media tells them they believe. This that implies we might have a choice, and the media's argument could sway our belief. We have reached the point about which Orwell was warning. We don't know what we believe until the media tells us what that is. Oy. I think it's time, right about here, that we should bring in a moment with Bob. All right, most of us have had epiphanous moments, or an epiphany. Apparently the other night, Bob had an epiphanette. Bob writes, an epiphanette. Every single person I know who doubts the official version of what happened on 9/11 started with how the World Trade Center buildings fell and went from there. Things didn't look right. It looked like a controlled demolition. The government's account of how those buildings fell did not seem to explain what we all saw. And then the artificial mystery of what happened at the Pentagon. It is an artificial mystery because the FBI is withholding at least 84 surveillance tapes that were seized in the immediate aftermath of the attack on the Pentagon. There would be no dispute about what hit the Pentagon if we could see the tapes. What has been released does not show anything that looks like a 757 hitting the building. And so the conjecture began. And the government can bring all speculation to an end by simply showing us a tape of what occurred. 3 months after 9/11, the National Geographic and others published short interviews with the gas station owner Jose Velasquez. Quote, his gas station, open only to Department of Defense personnel, is the last structure between the Pentagon and the hillside that hours later would become a wailing knoll. By the time I got outside, all I could see was a giant cloud of smoke, first white, then black, coming from the Pentagon, he said. It was just terrible, terrible thing to be so close to. Velasquez says the gas station's security cameras are close enough to the Pentagon to have recorded the moment of impact. I've never seen what the pictures look like, he said. The FBI was here within minutes and took the film. The timeline, Bob writes, of the FBI's arrival is curious. Back to the Geographic special. The second business was initially believed to be the Sheraton National Hotel, which overlooks I-395 and the Pentagon. Initial reports pointed out that hotel staff had sat watching the video surveillance in horror before the FBI arrived and shut down the scene. The timeliness of the FBI's arrival is, again, curious. However, according to FBI statements in response to the Freedom of Information request, the hotel in question was not the Sheraton, but was in fact the DoubleTree in Arlington, Virginia, and this video did not capture the impact of the flight. So the FBI confused the Sheraton National Hotel that did have videotape of the attack with the DoubleTree in Arlington that did not. Curiouser and curiouser. So the mystery about the attack on the Pentagon is needlessly drawn out, Bob writes. Conjecture runs rampant. And what the hell happened in that field in Pennsylvania? The government story does not seem to add up. And not only are they not forthcoming with anything to help clear the air, and they easily could, they did everything they could to stonewall an investigation in the first place. On the face of it, these actions look like a cover-up by guilty parties. So how could a 9/11 truth movement not spring up? Some researchers began delving into the mechanics of how three steel skyscrapers structurally failed and collapsed. But what is most annoying to me, Bob writes, is the attitude of the 9/11 conspiracy debunkers. And there's a website, debunking911.com. In a real dialogue, the participants begin with a kind of peer-to-peer relationship. Not so at this website. The 9/11 conspiracy debunkers immediately start off establishing an uneven playing field. Since you question the official story, you are a bastard idiot. They are from the same rational zone. The relationship turns from peer-to-peer straight away into parent-to-idiot child from outer space. They ridicule what we think we've seen. They talk to us as though we are so gullible. We really believe that David Copperfield ate an elephant, or saw the Statue of Liberty in half, or whatever lame-ass stuff he does during his show. They treat us like we are so stupid to fall for what we think we saw. We're all Zippy the Pinheads, and it's almost too much for them to even endure our presence. Once again, every single person I know that doubts the official version of what happened on 9/11 started with how the World Trade Center buildings fell and went from there. Some researchers began investigating how the three buildings collapsed. Others started working backwards from that point and looked into the actions or the policies of the government and key government officials. But it started with things didn't look right. Something smelled. The 9/11 conspiracy debunkers have placed all their chips on the mechanics of 9/11. They put all their 9/11 eggs in one basket. That's why they get so upset when we question the official story. Their denial is entirely buttressed by the technicalities of 9/11. If you assault those, then that's all they've got. If you somehow breach that bulwark, then they've got to reconsider everything. They might have to consider the possibility of their government's involvement. Oops, can't go there. Stop, stop. You're making their brains hurt. If you don't talk about the technicalities of three buildings falling down, what do they have to counter with? Did or did not George W. Bush tell the CIA briefer after the Bin Laden determined to strike in the USA presentation, "All right, you've covered your ass now," and then go fishing? Thermite? Who cares about thermite? We've got Bush administration hampered FBI investigation into Bin Laden family before 9/11. They, the debunkers, unequivocally state that appearances be damned. Regardless of what it looked like that day, there's a reasonable scientific explanation for three buildings falling down. All the anomalies surrounding the Pentagon attack and the crash in Pennsylvania, so don't even start looking for a conspiracy regarding the government's complicity in the attacks of 9/11. Is that what they're really saying? We're to ignore the preponderance of evidence demonstrating advanced knowledge of the attacks and the government's dismissal of the numerous warnings about impending attacks? A great deal of this information was brought to light because of the researchers who were motivated to look into the totality of 9/11. We can't disregard evidence just because some people quibble about why the research was begun. But even the authors at debunking911.com write, "Real conspiracy theory. The evidence for a conspiracy to use 9/11 to invade Iraq is significant. While there is not one shred of evidence the government blew up the World Trade Center, there is evidence that they used the tragedy to remove Saddam Hussein using poor weapons of mass destruction evidence." So whoever wrote this will not admit that the government committed the monstrous act of using 9/11 to lie to it. Will admit that the government committed the monstrous act of using 9/11 to lie us into a preemptive war. Somehow, the hundreds of thousands of deaths, the displaced millions, and the looting of hundreds of billions of dollars, the results of that conspiracy, is in some way more acceptable? If the government's conspiracy to lie us into a war is credible, why isn't the government orchestrating the trigger event even more remotely plausible? The Debunking 9/11 Commission position is that the government took advantage of 9/11 to start the Iraq War. I can almost, but not quite, buy into that argument. I can't accept it because the Bush-Cheney regime had too many things ready to go, off-the-shelf items like the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security. They were too ready to take advantage of the 9/11 attacks. That smacks of advanced knowledge, let it happen, made it happen scenarios. And in a sense, isn't this website creating a straw man argument in the first place? There's not one shred of evidence the government blew up the World Trade Center. Who said the government blew up the World Trade Center? The core conclusions are that the government made it happen or allowed it to happen. And I've written previously about a spurious third conclusion, but I'm not aware of any credible researcher that has said the government blew up the World Trade Center. Ultimately, we are being mocked for something we've never said or done. A familiar tactic of conservative wingnuts. I'm not saying debunking911.com are of the right. I'm just saying, I've been through this before.
Liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas, sends an email. He writes, I well recall that a couple of days prior to the two-week shock and awe bombing of Baghdad ordered by Bush, a Navy jet dropped a bunker buster, weapon of mass destruction, on a bunker where Hussein and his sons were allegedly hiding. They were not there, but 135 civilians sleeping in an apartment building next to the site were killed. Yeah, I remember that. That's one of those acts of terrorism that Jeremiah Wright might have been talking about when he talked about chickens coming home to roost. Those kinds of acts of terror have been perpetrated by various U.S. governments for the past 100 years, and anyone who doesn't know that is either willfully ignorant or a Republican. But I repeat myself. And regarding the war on terror, Douglas Feith is now confirming what Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and General Wesley Clark have said. Douglas Feith was the architect of the so-called war on terror, that the so-called war on terror is a hoax. There's a new book out, and starting right after 9/11, the book says, at the latest, the goal has always been to create regime change and instability in Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Sudan, Somalia, and Lebanon so as to protect Israel. And the goal was never really to destroy al-Qaeda. Gareth Porter, writing at Asia Times, points it out. 3 weeks after the September 11th terror attacks, former U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld established an official military objective of not only removing Saddam Hussein's regime by force, but overturning the regime in Iran, as well as Syria and four other countries in the Middle East. That's according to a document quoted extensively in then Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith's recently published account of the war, Iraq war decisions. The title of the book is War and Decisions. General Wesley Clark, who commanded the North Atlantic, NATO bombing campaign in the Kosovo War, recalls in his book, Winning Modern Wars, he recalls being told by a friend in the Pentagon in November 2001 that the list of states that Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz wanted to take down included Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Sudan, and Somalia. We have really been hosed, haven't we? We've been hosed to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dead people in Iraq, thousands of dead Americans, tens of thousands of wounded, physically and psychologically and emotionally, American soldiers and Marines. All of this in order to take down the enemies, the perceived enemies of Israel? I have a hard time believing that. That may have been, that's what Douglas Feith seems to indicate, Feith happens to be Jewish. But that can't be the primary reason for these attacks, or the plans for these attacks. It has to be more than that. It has to be insanity, a lust for power, from the sick Christian point of view, speeding Armageddon, just a whole list of things. I don't think even though there were and still are key members of the U.S. government who are extremely sympathetic to Israel, if not agents of Israel, embedded in the U.S. government, always has been, always have been, probably always will be. But there are also non-sympathetic to Israel types who are embedded in the U.S. government, some of them Catholic, some of them Christians, some of them, worship neon lights. I have no idea what I know what some of them are regarding their religious affiliation, and maybe that is what motivates some of these people. This sick Christian theology that's based on dispensationalism, is that what it's called? The Armageddonous rapturing and bodies floating up to heaven and yada, yada, yada. And, of course, as we've talked about on this program, part of that crazed scenario includes the establishment and defense of the state of Israel so that Jesus will be happy and come back, in which case the Jews have a choice, convert or die. And even if 6 million Jews said, okay, we'll convert, only 144,000 will be allowed to convert. The rest, I guess, will be put to the sword. Madness. Madness. Complete, total madness. When we come back, we're going to take some phone calls, so jump in if you are so inclined. The number here is 800-989-1480. If you have some things to bring up about Hillary Clinton's ass-kicking last night, and the fact that her campaign is, in fact, to everyone except her, finished, we certainly will entertain that conversation. So whatever you want to bring it on. The number is 800-989-1480. At some point tonight, we're also going to touch on what the Pentagon is warning of harm from Senator Jim Webb's effort to give educational benefits to soldiers after only two years of serving active duty. Only 2 years. Jim Webb, the former, wasn't he the Secretary of the Navy under Reagan? So the Pentagon now says, oh, no, that won't work. So we have that. And also, the suicide among Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans may exceed the total of combat deaths. Good God. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. Seven past the hour. The Molloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. As promised, let's go to some of your phone calls here, starting with RB calling from Saskatoon, Canada. Hey, RB, listening on XM Satellite Radio.
Hey, how are you? Hi.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Do you want me to switch to the handset, or is this okay?
Say it again?
Do you want me to switch to a handset, or is this okay?
Yeah, you better switch to a handset.
Okay, hold on.
Sure. Crickets. Oh, we lost him? Okay. We'll do somebody else while we're waiting. Shion is calling from Miami, listening on WINC. Shion, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
How are you? Listen, I'm like one of your callers. I've been waiting so long. I had my questions all framed and everything, but this is what I wanted to say.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask your advice about it and make a comment. You were talking about the journalists a few minutes back. How they're not reporting what
right.
they should be reporting, et cetera.
Right.
Mike, is it possible that these kids that are journalists now, and I call them kids, I'll say 40, 50, 30, 40, 50, something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's possible that we have a generational gap here. And what I mean by that, I notice that a lot of the young people today don't know what questions to ask.
Right.
They don't know what answers they're supposed to receive. They don't know how to frame the questions that are relevant to what's going on. And that, to me, is because of their lack of knowledge, their lack of being, you know, reading or mm-hmm. knowing the history of what has gone on in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking they are just going along because they don't know anything else to do. They don't know anything to ask. Is that a possibility?
Well, I think in for those members of media, whether it's print or television or radio, who actually are journalism school graduates, they are in those classes taught certain elements of journalism that includes how to conduct an interview. A lot of the people who are so-called journalists these days really do not graduate from a school of journalism. They may get a degree in what is referred to kind of jokingly as communications, or maybe some elementary form of sociological studies. They're not really journalists. That's A. B, anybody who works in the field of news reporting these days understands clearly what he or she is not to do. And what he or she is not to do is to press a so-called newsmaker, whether it's Hillary Clinton or John Sidney McCain III, or anyone else really who is in a position to, especially a politician, is the instruction is never, ever, ever under any circumstances to press them so hard as to make them angry enough that when the interview is over and the camera lights are turned off, that they will then call the head of programming at the network and complain. The business of television news is the business of making money. How do you make money? By having ad rates that are high enough to bring in millions of dollars a year. How do you do that? By convincing the advertiser you have lots of listeners. How do you get lots of viewers? How do you get lots of viewers? You don't piss them off. And you don't do that by seeming to put a newsmaker on the spot. So that's a long answer to this. I could say it this way. Most of the people you see on television conducting interviews, and there are some notable exceptions, but most of them are no more interested in the truth than you're interested in a case of the shingles. It's just not there any longer.
Okay, so what's the solution, Mike? I mean,
there is not a solution. Television news is not reformable. It will never be what it was. It will continue this downward spiral into infotainment that has nothing to do with the news that we need. It's impossible in network newscasts that run 22 minutes. That's how much on a good night is devoted to so-called news reporting, 22 minutes. It is literally impossible to report those events that we need to know about in 22 minutes. Even switching over to the McNeil Report on PBS that runs for an hour with no commercial interruptions, even that is difficult. So I think the way people are going to have to get their news starting, I don't know, 5 years ago, is to use the tools presented to us through the Internet. If you use a computer, if you use the Internet like I do, you have access to almost every single news organization on the planet. And it is certainly worth your time to investigate news organizations that exist in Europe or in the UK or in the Middle East or in Israel or in India or in the Philippines or in Japan or in South Asia or in South America. Go to those websites. Read how they are reporting the events of the day. The BBC is a good source.
Yeah, it's completely different.
It's all different. The only American-based news source, I think, that even approaches honest journalism any longer is CNN International.
Yeah.
CNN-I. They produce news shows that while they are played in the United States, they are designed for foreign consumption. Consequently, you don't see stories about movie stars and famous people getting arrested for drunken driving or drug addiction. You see actual news stories there. But again, CNNI is restricted by the amount of time that they can give to covering the news. Pictures accompanying news reports are wonderful, but I still believe, because I'm of a certain generation, that the way you should get the information you're seeking is through reading about it. And that means going to all these different web sources. So,
yeah, well, that's what I do, is I read a lot and go to the website.
All right, well, I hope that that helps, Shion. Got to move on. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the question. Hope I answered it right. Ed is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? Great show. First-time listener and first-time caller.
Well, welcome.
I just wanted to comment a little bit on your comments on eschatology, which is the signs of the future. And you talked about the 144,000 Jewish prophets that would be the only ones saved, and that's actually not correct. I mean, there'll be an unlimited number that are saved. 144,000 are the ones that will remain and continue to prophesy in regards to the Savior. So
okay, wait a second. Ed, why are you telling me? This is not a religious program. I frankly...
No. I was just saying...
Wait. When I reported that the other night, I said that was according to Pastor Hagee, who is John Sidney McCain III's, one of his personal religious advisors. I don't care what the Christians, the Jews, or the Muslims say about how many angels will dance on the head of a pin, or how many Jews will make it to heaven without having their throats cut, or how many Christians are going to rapture. I really don't care. So I'm just curious as to why you're bringing this up.
Well, okay, because it does have relevance, and I think that...
Well, relevance to whom?
Okay, to the situation in the Middle East. I think it does
no,
have a lot
no,
of relevance.
No, I don't think it has any relevance to... I don't think the leaders of the State of Israel really give a tinker's damn about Pastor Hagee's interpretation of the Book of Revelation. Do you?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree.
Okay.
And one of the concerns, I'm agreeing with you, that there's a certain Christian group within the government, and it's not dispensational, it's called predestination.
Okay, Ed,
in other words,
they
believe that everything is predestined from the very beginning
right,
to happen.
Right.
They don't
okay,
believe in
well,
free will.
Well, all right, listen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to stop. You have to learn that when the talk show host starts to talk over you, it's not because he's being an interrupter, a smartass, it's because he has to go to a break. Ed, thanks. I appreciate it. I hope you call back. Take care.
I'm just depressed and I'm sad for some, and I'm mad at the rest. We're taking lives without thinking for it. It's not bad enough now, I know they got to make it worse.
justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Brian is calling from Keller, Texas, listening on via the internet. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to bring up a point. Last night I was waiting for the results to come in from Indiana all night, and I was watching, flipping between MSNBC and CNN to see, you know, when he was going to announce the results, and they came in, and it was funny because on MSNBC and CNN, they both said, okay, it's over. Hillary should concede. You know, she's not going to get enough delegates, basically, unless the superdelegates turn coat, which would destroy the party. So I turn it then to torture myself every now and then. I flip to Fox News.
Oh, no.
And and Sean Hannity, expletive, was on saying, oh, no, it's not over. Hillary still has a chance. She should bring this all the way to the convention. It's just obvious that Fox News wants nothing more than to have this be a contentious situation where it's going to turn out to be a, you know, just like Rush Limbaugh wants riots to happen. It's just so funny that, you know, the difference in the coverage. It's just despicable.
Well,
and I wonder if you had a chance to see that last night.
Well, I was, like you, flipping back and forth between CNN and MSNBC, but I don't go near Fox News Channel because of what a famous writer said one time, be careful when you appear into the abyss because the abyss will peer into you. Or something to that effect. Sean Hannity is a robot. He does exactly what he's told, and for doing that, he makes an awful lot of money. This is a lad who's never had an original thought in his life. I used to work at a competing station when he was here in Atlanta, and I've said this before. I have a daughter who was very close friends with his wife, Jill. So I've got that relationship ended when Sean became the frothing, idiotic right-winger that he has become. He was always a right-winger, but he was able to keep it in check to a certain degree, but not any longer. But Sean's entire shtick is derivative. Whatever Rush says, Sean says, whatever the Roger Ailes or the cadre at Fox News tells him to say, he says. He cannot carry a conversation without copious notes and a huge stack of crap in front of himself. And as much as the Alan Combs is nothing but his foil and his butt boy on Hannity and Combs, Hannity does rely on Alan because Alan, as terrible as Alan Combs is, he's an absolute genius next to Sean Hannity. So if you're going to watch Sean, don't expect anything but garbage to erupt. I mean, this man is so out of touch with anything, any thought that's original, any concept that is even inches above whatever he is. The last person who talked to him put in his head. That's just Sean. Sean thinks that Oliver North is a war hero. So I mean, what are you going to do?
He's a criminal, is what Oliver North.
Well, sure, absolutely. Well, Sean's boss is nothing but a thug, Roger Ailes. So, anyway, be careful when you watch that stuff. Okay.
I just like to torture myself every now and then.
Well, I hear that, but it might be better to get nipple rings and you know, hang yourself from the ceiling.
Well, I actually enjoy that.
you're crazy, Brian. Thanks for checking in. I actually enjoy that. I'm sorry. Sent me into a coughing spasm. I've got too many listeners who would agree with you, Brian. Or not enough listeners who would agree with you. One or the other. Or as a friend of mine in North Carolina used to say, one or the other, too. I apologize for the coughing there. I'm just still having a little bit of trouble sucking in air and separating the carbon dioxide and the oxygen and releasing the waste material through my lungs. Bill is calling from Toledo, Ohio, listening on the internet. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Mike. Really happy to be a founding club member. What a great show you have.
Well, thanks a lot. How's everything in Toledo, homeboy? That's my home.
I know that. Wanted to ask you just real short. Was you east side down around Tony's?
No. Although Kathy and I have been to Tony Paco's several times, we brought home. What was it, Kathy? We brought home the pickles.
Pickles and peppers.
Pickles and peppers. We've done that. Been there. Got the acidy heartburn.
I liked that place in the '60s when that was a really growing concern.
Oh my God!
That was so much fun.
You talking about the 1860s and the 1950s? They've been around forever. Now I got to put you on hold. All right, let me put you on hold.
Sure.
And we'll come back right after the break.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, which is coming up here momentarily.
Okay.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to Bill in Toledo, who is listening via the Internet. Okay, where were we, Mr. Bill?
Well, we was talking about Tony Paco's, but let's go to the 9/11. That was a fantastic show you had on last week. I believe it was on Thursdays. And I went on after listening to the show that evening, that morning then, and watched that Mysteries Demolitions.
Uh-huh.
And I watched it twice. Well, I didn't get to bed till about 7 in the morning.
Oh, my.
And that was really something, and I was really appreciative that you had turned me on to that. I'm going to ask you, Mike. You've seen it. Everybody's seen it. A Bush sitting there in that school and classroom.
Right.
And if I'm right or wrong, did he just look like a cat that swallowed the canary?
I think, to me, he looked like somebody who didn't have a clue as to what was going on inside his own government, either in the sense of allowing those attacks to occur or assisting in their occurrence. Not to take anything away from the banality of George Bush's evilness, but as far as I'm concerned, this government has been run since Bush took the oath by Dick Cheney. Cheney is a degenerate, sick, war-loving son of a bitch who wants to see as much death as possible. George Bush is a coke-sniffing, drinking, party frat boy who knows he, no matter what he does, he's way over his head. He's always relied on other people to bail him out, family members, the Saudi government, friends with money, friends in high places. I see George Bush as being I don't know how to explain it. Ignorant. I'm not saying he's unaware of what goes on around him.
He was duped then.
Well, I think he's in
don't
on the.
I think he was a player.
No, he's in on the overarching idea.
I got to agree with you on that. And what you said about Cheney, I can't add anything to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have Mike, don't you long for the days? You know, you talk about media.
I'm sorry, Bill. You talk about media. What?
I say, you know, you talk about media. Don't you long for the days in the early 60s and that when you still could take and say, oh, I can't miss the evening news? I have watched the evening news. I don't know who's watching that? I mean, who could sit there and watch that dribble that they put out and say, I don't know which is worse. I had some things written down. What's worse, the press, these preachers, the politicians, or the pervert? I mean, you go ahead and name them off. Which one's the worst?
Well, first we'd have to define the word pervert, but I hear what you're saying. Bill, I got to move on. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Hope to hear from you again. Who listens to or who watches the network news? NBC, or is it ABC, claims about, 9 million viewers a night. Let's call it 10 million. Is that right? Have I got that right? That's 3% of the population. That means 97% of the population of the United States does not watch ABC Network News. If you lump the three networks together, you may come up with a figure close to 20 million people who watch, which represents, what, about 8%, 7% of the population? Is that right? No, I'll figure it out. It very few people watch it, apparently. And just let me clear up what he was talking about. Tony Paco's, that is a Hungarian hot dog place. Well, actually, they do more than just hot dogs. It was a Hungarian restaurant in Toledo that opened, I think, when was it, Kathy, in the 30s, 40s? I don't know. But it's like one of the places to visit when you go to Toledo. Not that you ever would, but... Sergeant Payne is calling from Daytona, Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. World Wrestling Federation?
Yes, Sergeant Payne.
How you doing, Sarge?
I'm doing great. I'm very upset at these so-called Democrats.
Yeah, why?
They will vote for McBush or McCain, whatever you want to call them, if their person doesn't get elected.
Oh, the ones in both the Clinton and Obama camps were threatening to do that.
Yeah, the ones that say, hey, if Clinton doesn't win it, you know. I mean, are these people, do they know anything?
These are whiny-ass children who, I mean, if you're going to be a Democrat, then you must vote for the Democratic candidate. If you don't want to do that... then get out of the party or don't vote or register as an independent or vote for Nader or something else. But to become a turncoat, I can't stand somebody who is a deceiver or a hypocrite on that level. Any Clinton supporter that will not vote for Obama if he becomes a candidate, any Obama supporter that won't vote for Clinton if she becomes a candidate, is a turncoat, a coward, a liar, a child, a sneak. And I hate to denigrate children with that, but you know, children have no sense. They have to learn their sense of ethics or morality. It's something that is learned. And I think these adults who are wandering around inside the Democratic Party, you know, kicking at things and sticking their fingers up their nose and saying, I won't vote for her. I won't vote for him. I'll vote for McCain. Those are the reasons that the Democratic Party is known for being the party that invariably snatches defeat from the jaws of victory.
I agree. And then I thank you for exposing McCain for the things that he has done that the main media is not covering.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one of the problems.
Yeah, well,
don't know what McCain's about.
Right, mainstream media is not going to do anything to challenge McCain, and for a very good reason. McCain is a Republican. The Republican is the party of corporations. I don't care what McCain says about special interests and this and that. You know, he's a liar. But it's the party that corporate America, no matter how degenerate the Republican Party becomes in terms of their crazed Christianity or their pro-Israel nonsense, no matter how crazed they become, corporate America wants to see Republicans in power because they understand something, and that is that the presidency really is a figurehead when simply a figurehead position when a Republican is in power because... It's run by the corporations, and unless it is a strong Democrat who truly believes in democratic principles, small d, the same thing applies. Bill Clinton was a corporate candidate. Hillary Clinton's a corporate candidate.
Absolutely, and I You know, in knowing that, what I have done at my matches is try to, when I get on the mic before I go out there, and try to expose McCain for what he is by saying, hey, you know, this guy's calling on a 100-year war, so I'm out here. I go out with a clipboard and a piece of paper, and I say, I'm here to recruit your children and your unborn children.
Oh, man, so be careful. Be careful, Sergeant Payne. You're going to get somebody pick up one of those folding chairs and seriously throw it at you.
Well, you know, I have to get the crowd into it, but at the same time, try to educate them. You know, people, come on, this is our kid.
Yeah.
My nephew is coming down this week. He's getting shipped off to Iraq.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so am I. And I'm calling it the farewell tour, unfortunately. But, I mean, this is a guy that's in the National Guard that's mm-hmm. already served a year over in Cuba, and he can't hold a regular job down because he keeps on getting called up.
Right, right.
And it's very sad.
Was he, did he have anything to do at Guantanamo?
He was there for a year. And I haven't really got to talk to him much because he lives up in New Jersey. I'm down in Florida.
Right.
But when he comes down, I'll definitely get as much from him as I can.
Well, Sergeant Payne, I think it's incredible that you are trying to push an anti-war agenda from a professional wrestling ring.
You'd be surprised what you can get away with in that kind of work.
Well, I'm hip, but, you know, I understand, I think I understand anyway, the theatrics of professional wrestling, but there's, the people, I've got friends who honest to God, get whipped up about professional wrestling, and I've watched on television occasionally, I've seen some of those crowds that watch you guys do your thing, and that would just scare the bejesus out of me to get in front of a crowd of folks like that and say something that might tend to make them think that you were not the red-blooded, pure American you're supposed to be. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I understand, and that's why I go out. One of my outfit, I wear an Army shirt out there.
Right. I've seen you on TV. I know what you're. I know how you go into the ring.
Yeah, and I tell them that I have served over in Iraq, and I said, hey, if you're for McCain, you're going to vote for him. Hey, we need you.
I hear you.
And then I ad-lib about the kids.
All right, listen, Sarge, we got to go. Thanks,
Thank
pal.
Thank you, Mike. Keep up the good work.
All right, sir, stay in touch. Stay in touch.
I will.
All right. He's about the only official TV star celebrity who calls this program. Tony Shalhoub used to call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It is 10 past the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, the podcast manager of this network, Christian Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy, our specialty correspondents, and the executive producer of the program, Catherine Bay. If you've not yet become a Nova M Radio founding member, please consider it. Go to novamradio.com and check it out. novamradio.com and become a founder. It's part of what keeps this network, this program, Randy Rhodes, on the air. Back to your phone calls. Patrick is calling from California, listening on KTLK. Patrick, welcome to the program. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, this is, how you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm a recovering right-wing evangelical Christian Dobbs and Ditto head, and I'd like to give you a little insight into what used to motivate me and what I believe motivates the Christian right in this country.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Well, I firmly believe it's based on a very sadistic form of elitism that they tap into people and a lot of young people. And it's sadistic because it's based on getting people to feel good about the fact that they are a minority that's going to heaven, while the majority of people are going to burn in hell. And I've heard a lot of them preach on the fact that they wouldn't hesitate to drop nuclear bombs in the Middle East and start all this. It's just
what,
like I said, I just think it's sick and sadistic.
What made you decide to give all that up?
I came upon hard times, and the Christian elite wasn't there for me. I realized it's all about about helping out their buddies, and I look at the job opportunities in the United States. It's sort of like, just because you want to go out and work an honest day's work doesn't mean you're going to get a job. And even if you have an education, it still comes down to who you know, which in my opinion comes down to an elitist society.
If it's because you felt abandoned,
it's not just that. Having my eyes opened what it's like to be in this country, to have no opportunities.
Isn't all that religious nonsense has nothing to do, at least in their teachings, with this world? It has to do with their vision of some next world, as they call it. I'm just not sure. And I am curious as to what made you give up something that was based on what they say is the immortality of your soul. How could you give that up?
Well, I'm not sure I'm giving up. I don't think I'm giving up the so-called immortality of my soul, but I'm not sure that the Bible is completely, I believe that certain parts of the Bible are the Word of God, but a lot of the Bible is written by people that want to control the majority of human beings, by a minority. And that's where the contradictions come in the Bible, and I really don't think a loving God's gonna have people.
Well, I understand what you're saying. Let me make a suggestion, and I make this with respect to you. There is a website that, if you ever get a chance, you might check it out. Its initials are ffrf.org, ffrf.org. It's freedomfromreligionfoundation.org, but you can use the initials, freedomfromreligion.org. You sound like a person who is on the cusp of reclaiming your own humanity, and I think one of the steps in reclaiming your own humanity is to get as far away from religious superstition as humanly possible. Now, I'm coming from the point of view of being a full-blown non-theist, which you may find offensive, but check out Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org, and just explore it and see what they got to say. All right,
thanks.
I got to leave it there. Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Thanks. Marcus is calling from Washington D.C., listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Marcus.
Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great, but I could be better, as some people would say.
I hear that.
Let me just say, in my virtual reality world, that Tom Harmon would be the president, and you would be my evil, maniacal Dick Cheney in a perfect world.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in a perfect world.
A Hartman-Malloy ticket?
Oh, man, that would be the greatest thing since
What have you been smoking tonight? A Hartman-Malloy ticket? Oh, my God. Now, a Malloy-Hartman ticket might not be. No, I'm just kidding. That's funny. That is funny. Call Tom's show and tell him that.
let me just say it.
Sure.
Let me say, Mike, I would really like Barack Obama in the incident that Hillary, in this whole dream ticket scenario, mm-hmm. Hillary doesn't accept due to her massive ego.
Yeah.
I would like a scenario that Jim Webb or Wes Clark would be the vice president. And I would like a complete moratorium on flag pins. And I would like every instance Barack gets a chance to have Stephanopoulos or whoever it may be to question why Wes Clark or Jim Webb is not wearing a flag pin.
I hear that.
I want it to be incessant.
I hear that. One of the probably from a political point of view, one of the smartest things that Barack could do would be to pick one of those two people you just suggested as his running mate. Marcus, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care.
No problem.
We'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Thanks for checking in. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.